never felt so strong. Hey guys, what's up? It's James Stewart here. Welcome to Bubba's World, episode number 4. I missed you guys. It's been a few weeks since we've done this, but we're back here. I got a special guest on here. I got my boy Raj. We got Cole. What's your last name again?
Beach.
Yeah, that's what it is. That guy. What up, Raj? What's going on, man?
Sunday after Daytona.
Yeah, you've been leaving me hanging, man. I've been doing these rewind shows by myself. Me and Cole been hanging out. You don't want to do the podcast.
The rewind shows are good, though.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a lot going on. Like, my picks for Supercross are looking good. Like, you know, Daytona was last night. And, yeah, I think you might have been right about my brother.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
we did lose some points last.
Well, time, even though, yeah, you lost some points. You lost a lot of things. You lost your minds. But hey, guys, I got a special guest. I said this last week on the Rewind Show. I told you we're just growing. We're baby. Now we're starting to walk. Maybe we'll crawl. But I got Daniel Blair. Daniel, what's going on, man?
What's up, man?
I told you guys, you'll recognize him.
I'm official. I got the shirt on.
Damn, he looks good.
Looks good.
Yeah,
it's good. It's tight.
We brought it professionally.
And he's got the white one. He's got the white one, which is a flashy. Looks good on you.
Well, thanks for having me, man. I'm pumped. We've been talking. I love the show. I love what you're doing. And to be here, this is cool. Get to see the property. I've seen countless videos of that place, but to be able to pull in and go, oh, that's what it looks like. So
yeah,
super cool. Pumped to be here.
No, I appreciate it. And I'm going to be upfront, guys. I'm nervous. Like, I got a legend over here. Like, I'm nervous. I'm used to being by myself, even with Raj on here. It's been a while. So, you know, we'll get into it. But no, honestly, it was cool to have you come. And yeah, you look at this property as like, wow. I look at it as like, wow, I'm back here again. Like, it's work. It's always work here. So that's why I moved away. Like, I was tired of living at work, but I moved away. But it is nice to come here and be in a different setting and then, you know, be able to have, you know, what we got going on now. So yeah.
I think perfect first in studio guest, the professional.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm nervous because I recognize how good the guy is.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. And, I mean, I'm the one that should be nervous here, but okay. We will get into it, but we have so many funny stories that intertwine from our youth that I'm going to get into too, but there's a bunch we'll get into, and I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it should be good. So Daytona was last night. What are your thoughts on it? I mean, clearly you were there.
I mean, I'm processing still in the moment. My drive over here, I was thinking about it, and usually it takes a day or two for everything to settle in. And for me, I like to go home and watch the race back and get that second view because in the moment,
it's weird. We talked on the way here. I haven't seen the race yet, really, other than just seeing it in person, but I like to watch it on TV.
Yeah. Afterwards. And for me, I'm watching a monitor the whole time. So I'm watching what you're seeing, but I'm watching it in real time and I'm focused on doing the job. So I don't really get to enjoy the race and even the little details that happen until I watch back and go, oh, I mean, and even when I was in the booth at Glendale, I called the Freese Craig incident and I said, Vince Freese takes Christian Craig to the ground. In the moment, when I watched back, I was like, whoa, there's a lot more to this that I didn't catch live. Live, I was just in the moment. So it's a different feel when you watch back.
Yeah, we watched it here 20 times.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I talked to Ricky a couple of times after that and he was like, people are calling me like an idiot and all this stuff. Like, because, well, like you said, I got the luxury of watching it. And the first thing I said was like, dude, like he just cleaned them out until you watched it like replayed and you guys go back over it. And you're like, nah, there's more to it. But yeah, I mean, even like last night, you know, with the incident with Malcolm and Jason, like there's always like, I think part of it is like the past history between what Jason, like, so anything just like Vince, it's like, boom, like you already got your preconceived notion already.
100%.
But then you watch it, you'd be like, all right, I think he was going for Eli, but he ended up Malcolm. So, you know, nonetheless, I mean, we kind of know what happens, but for sure, like it's hard watching. And I always thought like the little bit that I done like commentating, like, you got to stick to the screen and, you know, but like visually you see everything else that's kind of going on around you, but you got to watch this. Otherwise you end up talking about something that's not on the camera.
It's a rule. It's actually a rule for us, which is watch the screen because people see the screen. And if you're talking about something they can't see, you're going to confuse them. We do sneak up over the monitors.
You mean
and
that?
We do that a little bit. And I was doing that too, because I would hear the crowd and I wanted to know what it was before it came. Because, I mean, we have communication going on the whole time, but when you hear something happen, you want to go, what was that? So I'll peek and look. that way, when I sit back down, I know what's coming. And that happened when Mosman actually crashed at Glendale over the over tunnel by the start.
Yeah.
I knew it before we got it on screen because I peeked. I did the no-no. I looked away from the screen. But I wanted to know. I wanted to be in front of it, not behind it. But yeah, that Vince Christian thing, it was the angle coming at us looked a certain way.
Yeah.
And until you saw the multiple angles, you're like, whoa, there's a whole other side to this story. So, but
yeah,
that's the hardest part. But then, yeah, when you go back and watch it, you pick up little things that happened that you didn't see live because I'm focused on how to do my job, not exactly like what everyone's doing at all times.
So. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, like, you know, it wasn't until I started doing this and then, and, you know, having people comment and then like had like, you know, Ricky like text me and saying, you know, people are saying this about me. And I think like you guys have the luxury, which is awesome. Like you're driving the story, even mm-hmm. though like the story's been told and you're reacting to it, you're actually driving the story. Like meaning like what you say is kind of how I think of like what's happening. Mm-hmm. So if you say, you know, Vince is dirty or whatnot, it's in before Vince does anything, like I already think that like that's, and it's coming out of your mouth. So it's like important to kind of like, it's cool, but it's also important, like how much power you really have mm-hmm. to all these millions of people that's watching it. And it's coming out of your mouth and you're kind of telling my story, you know, in my head of what I should think. And so when you said that, for sure, you know, like you said, I saw it first thing reacted, that was dirty. You know, it looked like that until you start watching mm-hmm. And then, but everybody else that heard that, they saw dirtiness and whatnot. And so they're kind of, you know, they're reacting off that too. So now if going back, it's almost like you got to, you know, try to change that whole narrative and try to convince people, no, well, this and that. So, but still it's power, man. It's cool.
It is. And, and it goes into the history of the athlete. Cause if it wasn't Vince, it was someone else. We would have been like, they come together and they're done. But because it's Vince, I have a personal history with him and it's not great. My initial reaction was he just dirtied him. And then because of you and because of Emig and because of Langston, you guys all cover it during the week. And all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, I got to look at this from a different angle. And now all of a sudden I'm like, there's some responsibility that goes to Craig on this too. Like when does the outside guy officially get the right of way in a situation like that? And did Vince break when he said he broke? Like all of a sudden you start looking at it differently and you're right. The power of the call in that moment, some people aren't going to go during the week and listen to everything. So they're going to only see what they saw, heard what we said, and that's what they think.
Yeah.
So it's brutal.
And it's not like, I mean, you guys didn't do anything wrong on there. And even just, if I was there, I would have called it the same way. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, like when you think of Vince, when that happened, you're like, past history, dirty. Joe Shimoda, they came together. But mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's partly, you know, again, how Vince is. But it's really when you, like you said, we had the luxury from here, like, you know, slowing it down and all that. And then your post-race thing, that's when you have a chance to kind of watch it over. But, you know, it's not like you guys said anything wrong because James Stewart would have said the same thing. It's afterwards that, you know, you kind of realize there was more to it than that.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast on my drive over here with Ian Eagle. He's one of the NFL commentators, NBA commentators. And he was talking about that same thing and how, like, in the NFL, it could be a first down play or a touchdown or a penalty call. In the moment, you're like, you call what you see, but then they have a team of people with replays and officials and that are literally giving them the information to make sure they get it right as quick as possible. And I think that's the luxury of those resources is, like, they could get to all the angles and every piece of it within a minute.
Yeah.
Takes us more time than that. Yeah. Cause we got a live race still going too. We have to cover. So,
and it's not like you can go back and really like, unless they go back to their, you know, replays and stuff, but you still only have a time frame to really talk about that and continue going on. So it's a hard thing. And when Ricky said that, like, I was like, well, it's cool. I appreciate all the Bubble World fans. Like they're listening to it, but you know, like we're kind of laughing about it. Like people, you know, it's that message that came out, like that's what they think. And they think that like Ricky doesn't know what he's talking about. You guys don't know what you're talking about. Like, and it's, you know, some people are stupid. I'm just keep it at that. Some people are stupid, but another incident, like you're close to the source. So what happened? Like, what did Malcolm say last night after that?
They did squash it. Did you hear that too?
I went straight to the press conference. By the time I got out of that, everyone was gone. I got in my rental, went to the hotel and I drove here. I'm still processing everything. So I'm curious of some of the information from the other side, because I saw what I saw in the moment, but I don't really know the details after.
So did you see how they had the semis parked yesterday?
Yes.
They were parked from first, second, third. So in points.
I didn't even realize that that was that, but I saw where they were.
I'm assuming that's what it was.
Wow. Okay.
So, cause we were parked right next to Cowie, and the trucks are parked next to each other. And then even in the garages we're pitted next to each other, and we're like, ah, that's kind of weird. Like, you know, so then after the race, Mal puts his bike in the stand, walks over the truck, and Jason assumes he's in the garage. So he walks to the garage and everyone sees him walking over there. So they all follow him. And then it just makes it even worse.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, it just brought back, like, it was bringing back, like, just James Stewart, Chad Reed vibes, you mm-hmm. know. I'm like, oh, it's going to go down, you know. But what sucks for me is I like Jason. Like, back in the Chad Reed era, I fucking hate.
That's what happened. That's real. We keep it real over here. Okay. Yeah.
But I did hate
maybe
him.
We'll have Cole bleep. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not.
But I did.
We all hated him.
Yeah, but like, I love the guy now.
Yeah. I think Jason said it on Steve's show, Thomas. He was like, it's not like the day and age where everybody, they mingle. It's like, I call it a big, you know, everybody hangs out. You know, you train with a guy that's winning the race that beat you on Sunday. Like, the whole mindset back in the day, you're either on this side or you're on that side. You were trained to hate this guy mm-hmm. or love that guy. You know, like, and so to your point, like, I mean, if you were in my camp, like, you hated Chad Reed, like, because I hated Chad Reed, and because I hated it, then he hated it, and then he hated it, and you, like, yeah. So, but did you ever hear the story? I went into his truck and kicked his bike over.
I told Cole Beach that story.
I've never heard that. I mean, I've heard other ones. Well, those it was Phoenix, times, but not it? That one.
It was Phoenix, wasn't it?
It was that Phoenix. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I think
who does that?
Me. I who did does it. That? Like, dude, I karate chopped that thing. I was so mad. Like, so my mechanics, you know, at Phoenix, I was already
what year
hurt.
Was it?
2010. Yeah, 2010. Chad was on the Kawasaki. He was struggling that year. He, you know, he takes me out. Case in point, it was my fault. I cut down. You know, he ran into me, but like Vince and, you know, now that
is Phoenix.
This is Phoenix.
Yeah. The corner we're before on, the like, finish line.
10th. Yeah, yep, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Probably battling with you back there. Like,
probably.
Yeah. You, Blair and JT.
No,
yeah.
I was hurt. I was hurt.
JT were battling. You were just trying to get through us.
I was hurt. So I was really like fighting on there. Chad, I don't know what he was doing back there, but he was back there and he like takes me out. Now I'm pissed because like in 10th place, I broke my wrist that night. And so anyways, we go there. So he broke his hand when he fell. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he broke his hand. So I drove right past him after the race. He was in the asterisk thing. I didn't see it. I'm red, going to his truck, mechanics on the back. Somehow I pull up to his pits, get in there. I parked my Yamaha in the Kawasaki pits, hop off the bike with my mechanic on the back. Like somehow it slid up underneath, run in the truck. Where are you at? Well, actually, before I got in the truck, I karate chopped his bike off the stand. So I kicked his bike. So his mechanic came back. The bike was sitting there. I karate chopped it, knocked the thing over. I'm in the truck. Nobody's there. And it was a good thing because, like, you know, once you get to that point, you got to go all for it. Like,
oh, yeah, you know, you're not going halfway.
No,
you're
I can't. Like, I already made a scene. It's like when you, it's like you start to fight, you just got to get knocked out. Like, I was ready to get knocked out, whatever it was. And luckily, he wasn't there. He was in the asterisk thing. Then I think I got fined that night. But that was probably the dumbest thing besides breaking my own stuff in the motorhome. Like, because then, like, an hour later, you realize I got to pay for that and I'm pissed and you're an idiot. So, but I'm interested to hear what stories you talked about.
Oh, we got some amateur ones. I got a funny story that ties into your Houston story, which you've told about that was being a really rough night, right? 2012. I mean, is it time, Roger? We just tell the story now?
Tell the story, yeah.
So,
big night that night.
It was a big night. There's a lot of things, a lot of dominoes from that night. So,
K-Dub retired that night, too.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the story, also. So, I was racing 450 class that year and not doing well. I was just more making the night show money and just didn't know what to do with my life. So I'm just trying to make that cash. But that night I felt pretty good. I liked the track and got a good start in the heat, made the main. I was in ninth, ended up getting eighth in the heat because Wyndham off the triple scrubbed himself into oblivion. He was, I mean, done.
Yeah.
So I made the main that night and I'm on the gate and you're on the gate. Obviously we're all on the gate there. And the gate goes down. I race and I'm tired within 5 minutes. Like, I'm just like, I'm just can't believe I made the main. And all of a sudden, I see you on the side because that one rhythm on the side was dirty with that three on table. I didn't even do it. I just did the slow, careful line. But I see you're out and you're laying there and you're done for the night. I finish the main event, go back to the truck, and I had this weird feeling of like, I don't want to race Supercross anymore. Like, I just don't want to do it. And my buddy, Hobo Nick, I don't know if you've heard of Hobo Nick. He was a good friend of mine. Cole Siebler, we were all kind of joking around. He's like,
another part of the story.
Yeah.
kind of.
Who's that, Cole Seager? Oh, no, the Hobo Nick. I'll get to that. Yeah. I'll get to that. So we're all talking, and I'm like, man, that's crazy. I can't believe I made the main.
All right. Now,
whose phone is that?
Yeah, I thought it was mine. I was going to say, I'm a bad guess, but.
Oh, that was mine. Sorry, my bad. That was mine.
You threw an F-bomb. Hey. Now his phone's going off.
Hey, rough start.
Like, keep it real.
Like, I thought that was you. I'm like, bro, you're a professional.
That's what I thought. I looked and I did the double. I said,
yeah, and I was like, damn, that was awkward. But then.
Man, that was my bad.
Yeah.
James was staring at me like it was my fault.
Yeah, I started looking at you. Like, yeah.
I'm looking at him like, I can't believe you left your phone on.
Well, I just never heard that before in my house. So, that's okay, funny. Continue with your hobo story.
So, Hobo Nick, we're all sitting around, and I'm like, man, I don't even want to go to Seattle. Like, I don't even want to do any more of these things. And they were like, kind of joking. They're like, well, you beat James Stewart. Like, why don't you just end it right now and be done? And I did. I called the AMA, all my pre-entries. I got them all returned, and I quit racing that night. That was my last Supercross ever, and I bragged to everybody all the time. I beat James Stewart that night. There's no better way to end a career. So
that's funny. That's amazing, actually, that we basically retired same night. I mean, I still have nightmares about that. And yeah, that was an awkward day, man. Like, it was an awkward day because I got knocked out like 2 weeks before that. At Indy, and then I missed Toronto and then came back. And I was like, I said this in the show. I was trying to send a message that I was unhappy, mm-hmm. like kind of like I thought Roczen was in practice, like, you know, riding around 13th place. Like, and I was just like sucked all day long. And then Wyndham comes in. And then, of course, like my emotions fired up. Like, yeah. I got to go. And that's one part of the reason why I was like, dude, I'm done racing. Cause that always ends up happening. Like, I can, in practice, you can kind of do it. But when you, if you're a racer, you're a racer.
Yep.
And it's probably why you retired. Cause you know, you're going to go out there and give it. Mm-hmm. And like, you can't ride safe. So yeah, I sent Kevin home, like, and then I'm like, all right, cool. I think I crashed in the first corner or somewhere. I crashed at some point. Coming up, I see Jason Thomas. I'm like, I ain't letting this happen. And dude, that thing ballooned on me. And in my ear, I'm like, no. And like you said, it was nasty. And I got up, did the check, discount, double check, all that. And I was like, I'm done. And yeah, that story.
That was a long walk.
It was a long walk, but it was one of those ones that I was committed. Like, I don't have no regrets of it. Like, still to this day, I'm like, that was the decision. Some things you make and you're like, I don't have none.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to, James Stewart, we wouldn't be doing the podcast if I would have continued the way it was. And the hard part was like, it was happening out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, that's the scary part. So your story, yeah, you did beat me, dude. Like,
I got you.
Yeah.
I tell everybody, I lapped you like 5 times that night.
There goes my. I mean,
you were.
I went out like
you were sitting there
14, something like that. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I got lapped by the leaders like 3 times, so it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Deduct but, that too. So it was like 2 points. Yeah.
Yeah, and then to tie this all thing in, you talk about a long walk. My friend Hobo Nick, who was with me driving around in the van, the next morning he flew from Houston to Jacksonville, Florida. Stayed on the beach that night, slept on the beach, woke up and walked home. 6 months back to California. And kind of became a story. It kind of blew up a little bit, and he was with me that next morning, and we dropped him off the airport, and he started his walk home.
So Hobo really was a hobo,
kind of. It was like he had done a couple of these walks before, so we gave him the nick. It was more of a nickname than a reality. He had a home if he wanted to, but he liked, you know, doing adventurous stuff. And for him at that time, he needed a little reset in life, so it became official. But then it got popular, and like, Mathis was talking about it. Ryan Villopoto was all into it. So all of a sudden, he went from being just my buddy to, dude, everybody was like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to make it. And he had people finding him on his path, trying to figure out what freeway's on, and going and just giving him food, giving him water,
damn,
giving him
like
shoes.
Forrest Gump.
We call him Forrest Lump because he walked across. But he lost, probably lost 50 pounds. And then I was there when he flew out. And then I was there in Huntington Beach when he walked into the ocean. So he went from one ocean to the other and walked in and collapsed. And it was, but that's 6 months. Part of that story.
So did he pass away?
No, he made it. He's okay. All good now.
Like, I'm like, man, successful. I feel like an idiot now. Like, almost like Roger and his texting, right? His beinging. I'm like, all right, no, I was going to say something, but if he died, I can't say.
He's like he's the furthest thing from Hobo Nick now. He's got like a house and like a cabin and a boat successful. And he's all legit. But
was he ever bald headed?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Long story. Older guy, Mr. Haynes, he told me, he's like, James, you ever seen a bald headed bum? And I was like, trying to think. I'm like, no. And he's like, no, they're homeless. Like, what do they stress out? They ain't got nothing. Like, they ain't stressing about life. They ain't stressing about payments. They ain't losing no hair. So you ever seen a bald-headed bum? I'm like, no. So that's why I asked. So was he like, you know, all right, somewhat hobo. But dude, staying on the beach. So yeah, it's kind of suspect. It's like the homeless guy says, holding the sign, I'm homeless, and then jumps in a Mercedes, like at the end of the day. So yeah.
Or you catch the homeless guy on the side with the sign and he's on like his iPhone 12. Yeah, that's scrolling through Twitter.
He's got Jordans on. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
So that was that night. That was the tie-in right there. So when I hear you tell that story, I'm like,
it brings back memories.
And I feel bad because I know that was a rough night for you, but that was like memorable for me because it was actually a little bit of payback. I'll give you a second quick story and then we can move on. But this was payback, two paybacks. Once you took me out at Hangtown in practice one time.
I was going to say, like, Everett took you out.
Yeah, you blasted me.
That's why you wanted to come on the show. Yeah,
to bring that up and remind you. Took me out at Hangtown. That's my home race. I don't remember the year. It was 450 days, but it was, you know, the big fly 150, they call it now.
Yeah,
it's a big jump. It wasn't that big then, but then you'd go down and it was like a switchback left, right before you went around the pond the other way.
So
it was down that left and I came in and you blasted me out of nowhere. And I just got up and I was like, and you went down too. And I was like, oh, I was kind of honored, to be honest. I was like, that was sick. But and then final tie-in, World Minis in Vegas back in, I think this was 98. I was in the 80 14 to 15 class, and you were 12 to 13. So I won all the 14 to 15 stuff and, you know, stock and mod and all that. And the joke with everybody was like, man, you're doing really good. You're winning, but James is in the 12, 13. He's faster than you. And I'm like, no, there's no way. There's no way. And we did some lap times in the mains and you were like 3 seconds lap faster than me. And I won the 14 to 15. So on my big amateur national day, whatever, dude, you were smashing me from the young class. So Houston 2012, that was my payback for that.
Yeah. I mean, World Minis, that's Davey. That's Big Dave and Tony Alessi fighting. Like, I just remember behind the starting gate. You knew about that.
Big J told me that story.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Dude, that was, I mean, there was the amateur scene. It's funny, like now, like you're bringing this up, and there's a vision that comes in my head, like looking at all the names, because I used to get, you know, the lineup, you're like, oh, Shane Best, Gene Stahl on there. I remember you now.
Like, I was 2 years older. Yeah. So, but we would be in Super Mini together. And then every once in a while, the ages would kind of match up. But I could escape you by a year. So that was a good thing.
No, like now it's starting to come back. And I probably took you out of Hangtown because of that. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Well,
there's a little more to it.
Yeah, there's usually something like behind it, but except for the guy I did a lapper at Anaheim 2003. I just took him out for no reason.
Who was it?
It was a dude on Suzuki. I know his name. Now I can't think about it. But yeah, I was gone. I had like 12 seconds and he wasn't in my way. Nothing.
Three. So what it might have been one of the ECC Suzuki guys?
He was a privateer. So I even feel worse for it. Yeah, I'm going to have to find his name. I just cleaned him out. I did the old chat where I cut underneath a guy. Like they go in the middle. Like he does the arc. I hit the bottom and square up and go straight. So I clip his front wheel. I did him like that. And I'm going through the whoops like, da, 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 and jump the triple. I think I did a knack-knack afterwards. He's in the background like, yo, what up? And yeah, so... I'm sorry.
I think you took me out because there was like a 15 mile per hour difference between what we were doing. I think it was more one of those accidental freeway crashes where like the slow lane and the fast lane come together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not the personal side of it. Yeah. I'll just say it was an accident.
The only time I probably would have took out in personal was in the first year of 250 because I was so mad at Hangtown that I was getting blasted by all these 450 guys. But after that, like it might have been like that. I didn't try to take people out. I just wasn't that type of guy. And like I said on the podcast before, I would do it in different ways, like off the start, like the, you know, cut over, lean on you. Like, but that was only somebody that I needed to get points on.
Yeah,
I didn't try to take him out, but you might know. I don't know.
Let's talk about this Tony Alessi story.
I'll let the play-by-play analyst, the professional up in here talking about it.
All I remember from that is being... You know, because in Vegas, the World Mini, the track was like down kind of in this pit thing, right? And I think that was for wind.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
It didn't work, dude. Yeah. I know that I was fast at the bottom and I didn't like jumping out of those pits. But I remember being at the start where it was and kind of the left, we would all kind of sit and watch. And I just remember something happening to where it was like a altercation. Didn't really know exactly what it was until I found out afterward that it was Tony and then Davey's dad.
Yeah.
And then the story that I had heard, and I think this is right, is that some, there was building, obviously building, but then maybe Tony like spit
in his face.
Spit in his face. And then the next thing you know is they're brawling. The kids are out racing and the dads are like brawling on the side of the track. So I saw it happen, but I never knew what it was until later. And then I'd heard that's what it was.
Yeah. Cops came and.
It was the same. I got the same thing. Like all I saw like a dust storm over there. Mm-hmm. And then I saw a little brown man doing rolling down like a tumbleweed, like on there. And then he gets up like a, and he runs up that hill. And he's like, Tony was like the, heard about the spit in the face, but then he was like, like barking like a chihuahua. Mm-hmm. And then next police come, like it's always blown out way bigger than what it was, but you spit in my face. Like, what do you think was going to happen? So
it's so crazy now too, because Tony's so different now. And you talk to Brayton, Brayton's like, dude, he's the best team manager. I love him. And it's just, it's, he's like not the same person. I actually interviewed Tony on my podcast 3-4 years ago. And he said, if I could give you advice, I would, with my kid, he's like, I would just do everything the opposite of what I did.
Is that what he said?
He said everything the opposite of what I did. And I'm like, and he went into detail about just the prep, the approach. So I think he like lived through it, learned it, understands it now in this backside of things. And I think he realizes probably that it was wild back in the day.
He reminds me a lot of Brooks.
Yeah. No, Larry, I tell people all the time, like if Larry Brooks was on your side, like as far as team manager and like,
but so will Tony.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Tony, like as far as like just helping you and like that guy would do anything for you is awesome. Like he was great for that. But if he wasn't on your side, like good luck with that one. And then, you know, because again, like when I switched over, Reed was there, dude was, wouldn't even talk to me. I switch over, everybody loves me. And then, you know, things parted ways and then wouldn't even talk to me again. But
crazy,
the dude was like, into it, like I mean into it, and he had some like knowledge, like he was good, but as far as running the team, that's a different, that's a different you know mindset, like you know. But Larry was good at what he did when you were there. He pulled some stuff though, like we all know Larry.
I just interviewed him, not in an interview but every week for the broadcast. Bondo usually gets us 3 or 4 teams that we can go and sit with the team and very loose conversation, but just get our information for our notes. And last weekend, I got to sit with Larry in the semi and talk to him, and he said the same kind of thing. He's like, I'm in a new place compared to what I used to be. He's like, I needed to get away, and I'm different now, because he works with the Bar-X Suzuki guys. He's got these young young riders, so he's like, this wouldn't have worked back in my day. Like, his personality would not have fit what he's doing now.
Yeah.
The new him is working with what he's doing, because it's not the same person. Big, big change.
Yeah, and I give him credit, because you know, when Regal was on the team, and the same thing with Chisholm, like he always, like he was dedicated to those guys. Like he was always with Regal, always trying stuff, you know, and ultimately his whole goal was to, you know, use Regal to help like me win races. But as far as like training program, he was like everything. He might've been his mom for a while, but the guy was so dedicated on that. And it's awesome. And I think like over time, like everybody kind of realizes, you know, you grow up, you know, kids, you become a grandparent. That's probably what happened to, you know, Tony, like they all change. But, you know, it's like my kids, it's like I would, there's some things that like how I was raised, I wouldn't do that to my kids. But then at the same time, how I was raised is what I want in, like in them, because that's what, I think that's kind of what makes people and gives them that drive, like of how you react and, you know, raise your kids, but then it's like, you want to spoil them and all that. So it's a different perspective being on like kind of both sides going through it, you know, and all that. But yeah, there's some good times with old Larry, and there's some times.
Speaking of Chisholm, did you hear he got a feeling right at start?
Is that for real?
Yeah.
Yep. Wow.
Dude. I did this weekend on the lights bike.
Chisholm he's been going the same speed since I know him.
He's a rock man.
Hey, but dude goes in the LCQ. Dude, like, goes.
He's going straight to he's not even in
it's
the LCQ.
It's automatic with that guy. Yeah. He is something else, man.
And his bike actually looks pretty well. Like, you know, when Chase was out here last year, like, I'm like, look at his bike, like on there. Like, he does pretty good on there, and he loves that Yamaha. But
I think it's bone stock too, isn't it?
I think he said he put like a pipe and maybe a map on it or something. Or I think he told us Yeah, that he runs like a pipe and a mat. But then at some tracks, if the bike's too fast, he'll like take the EF, he'll like detune it back to stock because it's too good stock. Yeah. So he definitely is running probably the stockest bike out there. But you know, you get it set up right, you're going to be just fine. It's not like he's going to be out of power. So yeah, it's more just if that's how he likes it and that's yeah, how he rides it well, he'll do it.
Well, I mean, it's like the Suzuki. My Suzuki was so slow. It's probably the slowest bike out there, but I got some starts with it. Right. You know, so traction. So yeah, cheers, dude. Like he, feeling guy.
Wow. So 250s. That's 50s.
Crazy. Yeah. That's,
he'll probably do good too. I mean, he's, I think just, so. He's yeah, just good. So
yeah. Oh, on 250?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So they don't have anybody. Feeling? They didn't have nobody.
Yeah,
J-Mart and Kitchen
are both out. And Justin Cooper, I saw him last night.
They threw the kitchen sink at everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I mean, I was joking when I said Levi or what's his name? Is it Levi?
Yeah, it's Levi.
Okay, I got it right. Yeah, sweet. I really was.
Why, what were you calling
I was about to
Freddy
call,
Kitchen.
Yeah, I thought he was Freddy again. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was so Levi. Yeah, Levi was good, but.
Freddy Kitchen.
Damn, man. That cheers. More power to you, brother. I thought he was going to retire like 8 years ago.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he just pops back up and he's fine.
Yeah. So pretty what's wild. What's your thoughts on this season? Like maybe we should take a little break and then we'll get into that. Cause I'm interested to kind of see, like, I want to hear your thoughts, man.
Cool. Yeah. Sounds good.
We'll be right back.
Monster Energy AMA Supercross Championship.
Are you ready? Let's do it.
Don't miss Monster Energy Supercross. Tickets on sale now. Coming to Lucas Oil Stadium March 19th. For tickets and more details, visit supercrosslive.com.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back. You know where we're at, Bubba's World. Roger. Got my guest, first guest ever here, Daniel. And I know his name, Cole. What is it again?
Beats.
Yeah, anyways. But Daniel, I wanted to, the reason I brought you on the show, honestly, is that I love listening to you. Like I love just your insight and input, like on the races. And like I said before, like you have a voice that like kind of narrates like what I think and stuff. Like what do you think of the season like so far? Like with Eli and Jason, you know, them being like, you know, 1 and 2 in the points and kind of what's been going the last couple of weeks, it seems like to me Jason's kind of pressing a little bit, but mm-hmm. like, you know, what's your thoughts on Eli? Like, does he look as good as it looks on TV?
I think so. Yeah. It all starts kind of in the off season, right? You got these big changes. Eli's changing and you don't see it all the time. You made changes. Ricky made changes. So it does happen, but it'd been a while since we'd seen that.
Yeah.
So for him to do that and for Jason to do that and for Malcolm to do that, AP, all of a sudden it's like, what is this going to look like? And how long will it take those guys to get up to speed? Because I'm thinking Kenny and Coop are going to be the guys. And then at Anaheim, they go 1-2 and you're thinking, well, I guess this is just a repeat.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the whole thing just flipped on its head. And for me, I watched the series from two angles, one for the job and then one as a fan. As a fan, I'm loving it because it's just like, what's going to happen this weekend? I don't know. And different riders are popping their head in at different times. Obviously the two did break away over the last month or so, but that's one side. I've been extremely entertained. The tracks have been a big role in that too. They've made it really fun to watch. From the broadcasting side, I look at it more on the storytelling and what is that narrative? What are we going to talk about? And I've always been a big believer in being in front of the story, not behind it.
Yeah.
With racing, things are going to happen on track. We got to just roll with it. But we do kind of control the story, the big story. What is the talk out there? And it's kind of developed a little bit on the easy side where all of a sudden you've got a one-time champ in Tomac and a one-time champ in Anderson who both seemed unhappy and needed to find something different. And somehow, like right out of the gate, they figured it out. And now you have these two guys. And my thought is they don't want to be a one-time champ. You know, they want another one. And so that's been the fun part, is just covering it from that angle and really like building, like I guess, like a pyramid almost of what's the most important conversation. And then we have a responsibility as a broadcast team to make sure that certain people get back in there. Like Kenny's had a bad month, but we have to still talk about him. He's Ken Roczen. Yeah. So there's a lot of responsibility in our coverage on how we do it. But then I always fall back on just being a fan and how much I do love it. So I catch myself sometimes forgetting about the job and just loving it.
Yeah.
And that's for me, the big balance. But overall, I think we have a fun championship. Like every week to me, I feel like I haven't been really let down at all. Yeah. And overall, I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah. And ironically, you do a good job. I didn't even think about that story. Like it's like you said, it's kind of naturally kind of happened. Like the one time champ, like I haven't even thought about that, but I've also like, I am a fan, mm-hmm. you know, and also been on the other side to like kind of know like just the racing and dabbling myself in the TV stuff. But I always wonder like why you guys talk about Ken so much. And mm-hmm. until you just said it, like that's a part of the story, like of Ken is this, you know, he's struggling. But even when I said a few weeks ago, like, oh, he's done. Like I meant for his trying to win this championship, mm-hmm. he's done. But, you know, Ken's an athlete, like he's good. He'll figure it out. Like, and, but you can tell like there's a push as a fan's side, like, man, why do you keep talking about him? And I think there were some comments here, like in the beginning part of the season, they were talking about his sickness. They mm-hmm. kept talking about it over. I think it was not Kristen B, but the other girl, she was bringing it up. And it's cool to hear like, of like why that's kind of mm-hmm. happening, like your whole narrative, like building the story, but you've done a great job at like, it's not like it's in my face. That's, like yes. that's what you guys are trying to do. So it was interesting to hear you say that. But now it makes sense to me why certain things are happening when, you know, it's like, well, why? I mean, right. why are you even talking about it? Dude's like riding around here and there or this is happening. But to me, like what I brought you on here is just like, give me your real thoughts on it. Like, I mean, your narrative side, like it's, yep, okay. it's great. I get that. Like you're like, I get that part, but you know, did you see Eli being this good on this bike?
No.
Yeah, me either.
I thought he would be good because I trusted him as a racer. Like, he's Eli Tomac. He's very good. But I didn't think it would take that quick where all of a sudden he's got the most points he's ever had at this point and he's winning races earlier than he ever has and he got the red plate. I didn't think any of that. And it mainly because I thought the other guys were going to be better. I thought Cooper and Kenny were going to be harder to knock down and he kind of went through them early. Like it took a 3 or 4 weeks and the conversation shifted to where those guys were now the problem guys.
Yeah.
And Eli and Jason were not the problem guys. So
yeah.
to be honest, I thought he'd be good. I didn't think he'd be great. And he's been
he kind of changed great. The whole perception of that bike now too. It seems like I'm sure a lot of guys are calling Star, you know.
Well, and I think it's starting to make people think differently about a couple scenarios. I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Star kind of talks about their ability to do things a little bit more outside the box. And Jeremy Coker even said, yeah. he's like, I'll never turn down a rider's idea, but I will tell you, I told you so if I don't think it's a good one, but I'll let you try it for yourself. And I feel for like Eli and Jason's situation is different, but for Eli going somewhere where he had that freedom to do whatever he wants or close to whatever he wants. If that's the truth and this thing works, that could have a ripple effect to all the teams and the riders, they're going to want to go where they have freedom and don't want to be boxed in. So for you, I mean, it was obviously different time, different people, but was it that way? Did you feel boxed in sometimes where you were like, come on, man, I have some ideas. Trust me on this. And they push back. Cause I feel like that was his big move was I'm sick of the pushback. I want to try things and I want to go somewhere where that's not only allowed it, but it's encouraged.
Yeah, but not to speak for you, but for him, I think he was always in a different place because he's James Stewart, so he could mm-hmm. maybe push teams to do more for him. Like mm-hmm. the Pirelli tire deal. Like, dude, they were sending tires for him to try.
Yeah.
Like, and no one else would have done that.
Right.
You know, and no rider could have demanded that, but that's what they were willing to do.
Yeah, I mean, they basically created a new tire. The tires that Pirelli are running now, like, I mean, they literally shut down the factory to create, like, tires. But when as you say that, like, it got like that for a while. That's when you got the L&Ms and then JGR came into mm-hmm. that, like it was leaving the factories, you know, right. and all that point. But to me, it doesn't really matter if it's true. It's the truth is, do people believe it's true? Like, do mm-hmm. they, is yep. that like what the vision is? Like, is that the narrative? And it seems like it is. They like, to me outside, just being in the sport, like Yamaha still has control over that. Like mm-hmm. on there, Yamaha has always been, they've been pretty, you know, strict on that. We know like just colors, like you got to wear blue and all that. But I don't believe that it was because all of a sudden like Star changed something. They did something on that bike that mm-hmm. Yamaha couldn't figure it out. Like maybe the atmosphere or whatever. It's obviously different. They're moved here in the East Coast. But like, I just think like Eli, he was, like he needed a change. Yeah. Like to me, it's more what he did on there. The bike's been coming along, you know, like even when I rode him back in 2018, like it was a big difference. Like when I rode it here and you can kind of start to see that happening with you know, better finishes from the guys. Like even Ferrandis looked pretty good sometimes in Supercross, and then sometimes he looked like where the hell he went. Mm-hmm. And then the outdoors. So I think the bike was already improving. The reason I picked Eli to win the championship, because I just looked at, okay, who do I think can outrun him, right? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't think Roczen would. I think Roczen kind of had his chance the last couple of years. I thought Cooper was either going to be Cooper or he wouldn't finish top five mm-hmm. on that. This is mindset. Yeah. And I thought the other guys like Chase coming in, like, they'll win races, but they'll have inconsistency. So when you just put it up, it's not Eli's great, but it's also who's Eli like racing his competition. Right. You got to kind of understand your whole area. So I picked him just because I thought overall he'd be fast. I didn't think he would look this good on there. And to me, it's a mix between this Honda and Kawasaki.
Dead on. He looks closer to how he used to look on the Honda,
yep.
but not all the way. Yep. So you're right. It's almost like he found the perfect middle of those two bikes. He talks about the width and how the way he holds on, he likes it being a little wider. And he thought the Cowie over the last few years got skinnier and skinnier. So it all comes down to feeling, but I'm with you. I think visually he looks like a combination of the two, like almost like the best of his Cowie yep. days and the best of his Honda days. And he looks like he's doing it kind of easy.
Exactly. And that's what I saw. And I even told him, it's like, I'm like, when you watch the races, he just, if something gets kicked, he looks way more relaxed when he's in the corners. Like he just like, there's no worries like on mm-hmm. there. It wasn't like he was lacking speed on the Kawasaki. It wasn't like the bike is bad. Look at Jason. Like
right.
Jason, you could say he's riding better than he's ever had on that same bike or whatnot. But I think like we talked about like with Cooper and it's a mindset. Like I think that the biggest change was what Eli did like for him. And like the bike, him gelling with that, it's only made it like more like, you know, deadly. And I think the fact that the guys that he's racing against, the Cooper, you know, Cooper not being, you know, up to his form helps him. And, right. you know, to me, like I haven't seen that for a while. Like the only last time I seen somebody change that much on a bike was like Reed in 2009 I think it was 2009 when he got into Suzuki.
Yes.
Like there was like, all right, like now that's a combination. And luckily for me, you know, like, I got you. But, you know, still, you know, that was the last time I've seen that. And then 2015 with Dungey, when they went to that new KTM,
yep.
it was all of a sudden like he was he was frying Dungey, won some races. But when he got that new bike, it was like, dude looks like a whole different rider. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's when the new KTM Dungey edition and all that. But besides that, like all the years in the sports, like I haven't seen like that big a progression of like a rider becoming the best of himself and the best combination of each, you know, brand that he was with before. And that's what I see in Eli. And yeah. it's, you know, I think it just helps him mentally, because there's been a couple times this year where I'm like, oh, here he goes. He's going ET on me. But I think just some circumstances around him, other guys like struggling, all that doesn't bring it out. Like right. It comes up and then it just dips back down. So, like he's been good, but you guys have been at the races. So I always call him every Monday, like, hey, like, you know, tell me like what's going on. And we kind of got into it about when we were making our picks with Malcolm, you know, our Eli, you know, Ferrandis, all these guys. And I'm like, you know, you're there. So you get the inside. I'm only seeing what I've been through. And then like, you know, what I see on TV. And, you know, he can't wait to say, I told you so with Malcolm.
I told you so.
Dude, he is. I mean, he's riding good. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this. Like, do you think, like, is there a part of the mental thing I always talk about, like, on the show of progressing on, like, how to even getting in the top three, being a top three, you know, guy? There's a difference between getting third. There's a difference in compared to getting third to belonging in third, like being the third best rider. Like, you know, ultimately guys crashes, you can be that, you know, solid guy to always finish there, end up third, but then believing that you're a third place guy, right. like, so no matter what, that's where you belong. Everybody else believes. I thought that's a transitional period to, it's happening this year, but it needs to happen. Yeah. Like compared to like, okay, I'm just going to pick him for, you know, getting third or whoever, Eli winning championship, Cooper, you know, either second or not in the top five. Like right. that's to me, like it's all kind of a mindset of things that's happening. So I'm curious to kind of hear, do you feel like the same thing? Like there has to be a progression of losing in the fights and slowly winning to really believe that you can win. And then there's a process of like now, like getting there to do it. And then once you do it again.
Yep.
And then it becomes like when you pick somebody, then that's an expectation of yours and everybody else around.
100%. So I look at it like dominoes. Each domino hits the next domino, and that's how you finally get to the end game, wherever you're going to be or what you're going to do, whatever. And that's not even just racing. That's just life. I really believe in that model. I think for racing, if you're a top 10 guy, but you think you can be a top five guy, you think you can. I think human nature, once you get a top five, now it's like the expectation, like, right, now I'm a top five guy. I'm not going back again. Like, I want to be this guy now.
Yeah, I'm already here.
Yeah, wow. So it goes from I think I can to now I have to. Yeah. And then immediately, like human beings, we just want more. So now all of a sudden, I think I can be a third place guy. Then you get one, now I have to. I've noticed that with Malcolm. Instead of being a guy who's chasing a podium, it seems like now he expects it and demands it, and he's riding like, I have to be on the podium now. And that wasn't what it was maybe a few weeks back. So yeah. I actually like what you said on here going into the season about him. You said you thought year two was going to be where it really all comes together because he has a lot of dominoes to hit on year one. It all needs to make sense. You need to get the bike, the training, the belief system. It did happen faster.
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight, but it's like each week, it's just slowly building and working towards it.
So, but I truly believe that as humans, we always want more. So as soon as you get something, it's no longer a want. Like that's now the standard. Yeah. Now I want what's next.
Yep.
And now I want what's next. So for Malcolm, it's been fun to watch because he's got the speed. He's been so fun to watch. But now it's all coming together. And now again, now I don't think of him as, man, can he get top five this week? Now it's like, if he gets fifth, this is a bad night. And it's crazy how quick that happens. I mean, time moves fast in this sport, you know? So
yeah. I say, talk about perspectives. It's not, it's perspective, your perspective, but it's also like what others think about
100%,
you. 100%. Yep. And for sure, like it, when I looked at Malcolm, some people think it's like a negative or whatnot. No, it's, I just know the process because like even being where I was, like winning and then like having a couple of years of down, how hard it was like to just get back on that level on there. And I thought it would just be unfair to be like, yeah, you should. Like it's an unrealistic goal. Like even with Chase last year, like we worked on like, look, let's have small goals, right? Let's get in here. Like let's be fast. Mm-hmm. Let's just show something. Let's show that like it's there. And I feel like with Malcolm, that part's like he's always showed he's been fast. Then he showed he qualified first at Anaheim. Then he led some laps in the heat race on there. But then you can see the progression of like what happened last night at Daytona. Okay, he was fast in practice. But then he got in the heat race compared to what it was a couple weeks ago. You saw the nervousness coming out. Last night, it looked like he should have won that heat race. And he did. I think he believed it. But then, like, going from that, like, to winning a main event, it's the same thing that has to, like, happen, that transitioning.
Right.
And so, to me, like, there's always a, there's a small goals, but there's always that suffering and there's a balance of, like, doing it. And then you really tell, like, I always say, like, you can always tell the guy after they do it how to react to, like, do they do it again? Because once you do it, like, that pressure, the real champions is the ones that get up there and they stay there. And that's why I always had the admire for Ricky, you know, to do it this long and continue to do it like week in and week out. Everybody can win a race. You know, you got guys that win a championship, but it's getting there and then expecting to do it in yourself. And then everybody else to where you just said is like, he gets a fifth place. It's what happened. And
yeah,
I lived that my whole life. It was like third place. Like what happened? And I'm like, well, it's a good night. And I wish like now being in this, like where I'm at, I wish I could have just enjoy like what third place was, but it was always, if you didn't win, like, what are you doing? And so that's a pressure it's unquantifiable, like of like, dude, it's either all like a nothing. And it's not what I believe. It's what everybody else believes. And so I just thought that needed to happen like for Malcolm. And it is like next year, like, he might be one I might pick for a title. Like, and I see that progression. So
well, I can tell you last night, he genuinely was expecting to win that race.
Dude, he had like, it was Mookie fever.
I had the fever hard.
He had the fever. He still sent me. Yeah, I sent you the thing. Like, hey, here's some poison sickness.
The little meme you sent me was pretty good. If we would have done a little Photoshop, we could have made it even.
It kind of looked like you. It kind of looked like you.
Well, that's when I first saw it. I was like, did you draw that? Like, that looks pretty cool. Like, still,
I mean, yeah. He's like, oh, the fever. And I sent him, you know, whatever those things are. I don't know what they are. I do have it.
I have the fever. And the reason why is it's the same thing that I had for Chase early in the year. And I said this on the broadcast. I think he has all the pieces of the puzzle and he just needs to glue them together.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I don't see anything really missing now except for doing them all at the same time.
Yeah.
Fitness looks great. Starts are good. The racecraft's been good. The minds, everything's there. You just got to nail them all in one shot. And then you win and then you're like, oh, that's how to do it.
Yeah.
So I feel it's coming because it looks like it's coming. It just, I don't see any weakness in the program except for putting them all together on the same night. That's it.
And that's a mentality. It's all mentality. And, you know, so we talk about this all the time, perspective on everything and, you know, your thoughts and beliefs. And again, then once you get that, then it's everybody else's thoughts to where, oh, that was good to like, what happened? That's mm-hmm. the question I used to, what happened? Like, well, you know, got my ass kicked. That's what happened. Like on there. No, what, did you fall? Yeah. So usually I always did fall like on there, but.
I think I've been guilty of that myself. Now that you say that, I'm like, I probably said that to you.
I used that. It was never. And I ain't gonna lie. Like, I probably would have won more if I would have looked at it the way I look at it now.
It's hard to do that in the moment, though, when you're.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why I won so much, because I didn't look at it that way. Mm-hmm. It was like I was going in to win or die trying. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, it was my motto. But I would have won maybe another title. I would say that, because then I would have like understood, okay, this ain't all bad. Like, this ain't fourth, it isn't all bad. It was literally like a third place was like I got last. Like, and that's why I always felt like if you don't win, like, what are you even here for?
But I would think that comes from your whole life history, because you won from the beginning. You always won. So anything less than a win from childhood was a failure, where not everyone has that. It's the Cincerello effect a little bit. I feel like he races way too passionate because all he's ever known is to win, and he can't stomach the idea of not winning. And it's like, it's a whole new world now, but that's all he knew his whole life.
Yeah. And which is funny you say that, because I thought the failures that like he had was going to make him like even stronger. That's mm-hmm. why I actually picked him to win, because of what happened in him, like overcoming that.
Right.
Like I tell people what he did that year when he won the outdoor title, like at the Vegas, like that was huge. And so when he came in the next year, I'm like, all right, the guy's been, he was the guy that was supposed to come in. The next Ricky Carmel, James Stewart, he mm-hmm. was the next guy. And then he gets hurt. Then he gets hurt again. Then he gets hurt. And then he's like, he's clearly the best. He's winning the title. Last race, he falls. He doesn't get hurt, but he blows the title. Literally blows it. Comes back the next weekend, goes 1-1 or whatever. He wins it. Then he wins the outdoor title. So to me, it was, he had a foundation that I thought he yep. went through so much than anybody else, that I didn't see this kind of what's happening, like, you know, with him. Like, just that whole, like, maybe mental thing on the mindset. Like, of course, he's had a history of getting hurt, so that's not surprising. But surprising to me is to be, like, that guy should be so strong mentally, because he's been down like so many times mm-hmm. and he's climbed back up multiple times. So you would just think he would almost have that Cooper Webb mentality. Like, mm-hmm. there's nothing that can break me. Like, there's nothing. And, you know, you can tell like he doesn't.
It's crazy you say that, because when he was on the broadcast in Minneapolis, got to spend a lot of time with Adam, more than normal, a lot of one-on-one time.
Yeah.
And he actually said that he was so nervous that outdoor championship that he did win, that he was almost numb to it, because it was like, what else can go wrong now? Yeah. Like, it's almost like Vegas, he hit rock bottom so hard emotionally, which, by the way, I had to interview him that night, and it was probably the only real scared moment I ever had broadcasting, because it was so personal, and I knew, I mean, he was crying over there, and Bondo's in my ear, and he's like, Daniel, you have to get over there and talk to him. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to.
Yeah.
But I knew I had to. But anyways, he was so, it's almost like he got broke so hard that night emotionally that he did come back with like, what is there to lose now? And then all of a sudden he just ran through that summer. And it may have been from that, just hitting that rock bottom mentally and emotionally, to where, what could be worse? It was the worst night of my life. It's all good from here.
Yeah.
And then he rode good.
Yeah, no, I would say like that's 100% correct, but I believe that was correct maybe for like three races. Mm-hmm. Because then like he won like the first three races. Then it became back to, I don't care like what you think, like there's, you've been a champion. So that mindset's going to kick back in. So maybe that numbness of like, might as well not overthink it because like something's always going to happen. Like maybe that's what he's meaning, that numbness. Mm-hmm. But I just think like that's powerful, man. Like I don't know how many other people in this class that he's racing against that like has that, and he should use that to his advantage. Like mm-hmm. really. And so, yeah, I spent a lot of time with him cause he was here.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was strange to hear like a lot of these guys, like I mean, not just him, say some of the things like they were saying. And I'm like, dude, like you don't realize like how you might say this jokingly or whatnot. It's like, but it's powerful. Like the fact that it comes out your mouth, it's, you watch it transition into the weekend and on there. And I'm like, it shouldn't be like that. But it's, again, it's a different day and age. I mean, obviously, as you know, like you never heard, like, I mean, there was days that I'm like, dude, I can't walk. This bike sucks. But there was no way, like there was not too many days that I went to the gate, despite all that I thought I was going to lose,
right?
Like ever on there. I thought maybe, I mean, I might crash or whatever, but like I never was worried about like, I can't win. And then when I did was when I was battling Blenny Bloss's ass. Why were you battling with him in Washougal? And that was the last time I raced. It was the first time I went to the gate and I wasn't nervous. I was thinking about other stuff. And I'm like, that's it. That's it. Cause I have no, I'm not even thinking about like why I'm even here. And I've always been that type of, I've got to win. That was my mindset. But I think just in a championship wise, I think if I had the mindset of being like somewhat of these kind of guys, a little bit just like nonchalant, I think it would have been better off in the championship. But what not having that is what made me 50 wins. And,
right. Exactly.
You know, all these
same
titles.
Thing.
So
double-edged sword little bit. Like what's going to happen if I go these two ways? And
yeah. And I think a lot of it was also the people around me on there. What I went through a period of thinking about everybody else, like, mm-hmm. Okay, I can't just win. I got to dominate on there, you know, and all this. And I think that kind of got to me because then you start doing things that, you know, you're not even, victory wasn't even enough. Like, and that was a time, victory wasn't even enough. And that's probably why, you know, I knocked that dude down in 2003 laughing at him because, like, I wasn't worried about it. I was going to win because I knew that was going to happen. It was like, what else I can do in between to make everybody else happy to think about me. So,
and yeah. Entertain yourself along the way.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there's races, dude. I was like, I'm going to win by a minute today. Like it wasn't even a thought of like, I'm going to win. I already know that's going to happen. You know, it's going to happen, but I'm going to win by a minute. And, you know, that's how I got through that 2008 motocross season. Cause I already knew I was going to win. Then I was like, I'm not going to let anybody lead another lap.
Right.
And then I did, and I'm going to win this race by a minute. And I did. So,
it's crazy how powerful the mind is, though. It is. It can really do a lot for you, and it can really not do a lot for you too if you let it slip. And you know this, the sport is so mental, like you said. I feel like you're always getting hit with reasons to create self-doubt, and you gotta deflect it at all times. Everything can make you feel like there's a problem. And I think for a lot of these riders, I think they let that in too much, and they're constantly looking around and pointing to things. And it's just crazy how the mind can work. And then all of a sudden you snap your fingers and it's like, I mean, look at Webb, look how quickly he turned around. All of a sudden he's like looking feisty and fighting like the best, you know, like he normally does. And a couple of weeks ago he was cruising around in eighth. Like, how does that happen so fast?
Yeah. And you know, because you've been down there, like to me, I learn a lot from people talking mm-hmm. on there. Like I watch his interviews. Like I could tell, like even in his interviews, like he doesn't believe it is like just his mindset. Like, and it wasn't until like Dallas, he was pissed. Like he was all mad because he didn't win.
It's like,
yeah, but that was Cooper. And I'm like, that's the mindset. And that's why I said, like, either he'll win or you won't even get top five. Like, right. there's really no in between. And for half the season, he was like that. But then, like, I told him, like, I'm like, yeah, that guy's like, he's coming back. But even with the champion, the number one plate on there, there's a process that he was even going through to like, that belief of like happening. The first race he came back and he was winning, I felt like he didn't want to blow it almost. Like he wanted to salvage that third place, second place. I think he ended up second that night.
You're talking about Minneapolis?
Minneapolis.
He rode well, but he rode protective.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, he didn't fight Chase when Chase went around him on there. Like he let him go Cooper last year and even like last night. He fought on there. But and you're talking about two-time champion. The guy has a number one plate. Like there's only been six races and even he's like mentally trying to like, you know, piece it back together and like, you know, small goals.
Just baby goals. Steps.
Yeah,
and rebuild. It is so, and that goes back to so many different things too, just how short-term memory the riders are, the fans are, everything. This thing moves along so quick. It's crazy. We're talking about last night, Cooper Webb could have won that race and the lapper and all that. A couple weeks ago, we were like, what is he doing in eighth place?
Just fell over like a wet noodle.
He fell over at Anaheim. It was like the laziest fall and then cruised by the whoops. Like, it's like, who is that guy? And then now at Daytona, I'm like, that's that guy. And it can happen so fast with just an adjustment here, adjustment there. And all of a sudden your brain thinks a different way. And now you expect what he expected to win last night.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks ago, he was just like, God, I hope I get through this.
Yeah. I mean, I know he left. He shot the hostage. He shot the hostage with burner.
Yeah.
You know, but like, you know, people, they're like, okay, he's in shape. Like, you know, like it don't happen overnight, but what happens overnight is like what you think that like that change was good enough. And I always say like, I mean, being a star, being Cooper Webb, James Stewart, Rick Carmichael, like, hey, like you, Roger Larson might be a hostage on there. I'm gonna have to shoot him, but ultimately it's gonna help everybody else get set free, whatever it is. Like,
and, thanks.
But you survive. Like,
it was a hypothetical.
You know, on there.
I'm taking and, a few bullets.
You know, it probably wasn't what you know Michael was doing or whatnot. It's because again, all the baseline of what you know their program, it's still here on there. But it's also like what certain people bring mentally and what you think mentally. That's what's really important. And then you get to your competition on like what they start thinking of and how they react towards you. And I felt like what happened with Jason last night, like that was a reaction of like his character and what, you know, popping caps and blowing bombs. El Hambre, you got to get that in there, of like his past history that lent him to get, he should be stewed. What Malcolm reacting to him, that's history. That's not what necessarily happened right there. Because, you know, I'd be curious to know if you had a chance to see it. Like, Jason didn't go to take Malcolm out. Like, he actually went in to hit Eli. Eli actually hits Malcolm.
Yep.
But, of course, Malcolm from Dallas, you know, past history and all that, Malcolm saw him and he did what I said Jason shouldn't allow to happen. Mm-hmm. And the last person you want to mess with is Malcolm. That's what ended up coming out last night. And so...
And it's funny to say that too, because I didn't, again, this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. In real time, I mean, we're hearing it and I'm on the move. I'm running from this side over to this side and I'm like, oh, dang, Jason just busted, just drilled him and Malcolm got him back. And then in the press conference, Eli said, Jason came into me. I got like sandwiched. He's like, I tried to kind of keep it low. He hit me and I hit Malcolm. So it's funny how we move along from the race and you learn more about what happened and there's more context to it. So so to that point, again, me watching the Instagram videos back on it, it's like, that was a bummer situation for multiple people. Cause I thought Malcolm could have won last night. I really, he felt it on that track. He looked really good. And then for Jason, he was fast too. That was an opportunity to either A, maybe beat Eli, or at least B, don't lose that much to him in the points. And I thought they asked on Race Day Live, what would be a win for Jason? And I said, don't let it get away from you. You got a lot more races back in the indoor stuff. This is not your house. This is Eli's house. Just survive this one. Huh. And then the combination of a couple things, and then that history comes into play, and the next thing you know, he's laying in the sand.
Yeah, I mean, this title is still open, right? Like, I mean, Cooper Webb still can win, you know, if he gets in a roll, but he needs luck. Jason didn't lose it. Like, what happened last night wasn't, like, he didn't lose a race last night. He lost it because of, like, what's happened last weekend at Dallas. Dallas... the Anaheim, like those are the reasons why certain things, like, or you get in there, you hit Malcolm or Eli, Malcolm gets into him. Malcolm thinks you're taking him out because of what happened last week, few weeks, whatnot. It's funny how like all these things, like they come back and like haunt you. It's a true thing. Yep. It's a circle. Like things come back. What makes you El Hombre and what makes people fall over being nervous when they're in, you know, you're behind them also like can turn around and be like, it can haunt you in this situation. So Jason, like, he didn't lose the race last night, you know, like that was the end result. when he lost the race was like the, you know, the history of that.
Right.
But he's also been in, he's in that position because of history too. So like you said, it's a fine, it's a two-edged sword on that. But for sure, I was, I wanted to talk to him because did Malcolm, like, did he get a chance to see it?
See.
Yeah. Like the replay afterwards.
Yeah. I think,
like, did he
spend an hour in the AMA truck?
Oh,
with really? J-Bone. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, J-Bone. I didn't know that. Hey, they got fined. They got docked.
Yeah. They got docked a position, I think.
Yeah. Did
Isn't
he
that actually, what it was?
They both did?
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that out this morning, too. Yeah.
Didn't know
yeah,
that.
So Jason lost more points on that, Malcolm, too, but.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it was his fault.
No, I mean, I don't blame Malcolm. I would have done the same thing. Yeah, I would have done that.
I spend a lot of time in arena cross. I'm big on street justice, man. Like, when you get somebody, it's, or if they get you, it's just like, when am I going to get you back? I don't know. It might be in the next heat. It might be in a dash for cash. It might be in a month. I don't know. But it what goes around comes around. In arena cross, it was almost like part of the game. So when I see it, I expect it. After round one, when Barsha and Anderson, I was like, well, at some point, Ombre is going to take Barsha out. I don't know when, but he's going to.
But I think it's done now. I think, like I said, they squashed it. And
yeah, well, he bought some clothes and stuff. Yeah. So it was good. He got the merch. So it was good. But
Malcolm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're good now.
Yeah.
And I think what the funny tie-in too is and this goes back weeks ago, but I was on my phone looking at the Racer X vault and I saw that in 2002, Eli, Jason, Justin, and Malcolm all raced together on 65. So that's why I presented that kind of story back at like San Diego. We turned it into a feature. And when I interviewed Malcolm for this feature, he said that when they were kids, Jason like kicked him at Texas one year, like kicked him. So they both kind of joked around like it was all loose and funny, like, nope, you know, just kids, whatever. And then when I see them on the ground together, I'm like, man, we just did a feature on how they were kicking each other and stuff. And now it's like real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just weird timing how it happened that quick.
Yeah. I always feel like there's a lot of things can change you. Like when you're in control, like you can remember like what you're there for, right? Like Malcolm, he's got a shot to win the race, you know, like, you know, I don't want to get into this, but then like when that anger comes out, like that split second, that's why we said like, he's not the guy you want to mess with. Cause I mean, we all lose it. Like when you do lose it, who comes out? Like, well, Debo comes out, you know, and Jason Fountain. And so I'm like, you don't want to like mess around, but you know, also like, I think that's the thing that Eli's doing well this year is, you know, going race by race, circumstance by circumstance, finishing here, like understanding, you know, the short game for the long game. You know what I mean? Like he's not getting caught up on something. Like he's okay, I'll just let this guy go. Like, and you know, I'll just let this guy, and he's actually letting those guys kind of beat himself in a sense. And you know, I think like even though Jason, him and Barsha got into it, and him and Malcolm got into it, you're 3 points back, man. Like you're 3 points back, and your whole title fight could be in a straightaway right here. Like it is
100%,
like on there. And I think that's where, you know, to me, it's unfortunate because he was going in. I see what he was trying to do with Eli, to just try to stop him to win the race because Eli's at Daytona. So you try to go in there, but then it's the reaction. Malcolm knocks him down. Then them going off the track, holding it wide open down the thing, then trying to get him back. That's the part that I feel like that you got to change because you got so much more to lose. I mean, both of you guys, they got a lot to lose. And yeah, as a fan, you're like, damn, it's good watching on TV. But then as a fan on this whole side, like you want that title to go down. Like, and it's not, you don't want the guys knocking down each other.
100%. You know? And I like what you said there about the long game and the short game, because the ultimate goal is to win the long game, which means you have to be super efficient in the short game. All those little conscious decisions along the way. And if you go back to Arlington, if Jason just gets second to Malcolm in that first Triple Crown race, he probably beats Eli in the overall. Yep. And now they're tied at Daytona. Yep. And now you also don't have this street justice maybe coming at some point. So it went from what could have been a tie to now we're talking double digits out. Yep. And it was that fast. Yep. And Eli's right. Eli, he stays out of those things. He picks his battles.
And he was always pretty good at that too. There was always a rival or whatever, but there was never like enemies. Like,
I know this, and I Josh Grant used to do it to me. Yeah,
that was your guy,
cool. Dude. He was like,
He would just try to race you for a
dude. Like he took me out, like on there, and I knew it, like on there. So if I got a bad start and I had to come up through him, I'm like, God damn it! Like here it is. And so I know that side of like the whole Jason Malcolm deal. Malcolm's obviously he's trying to win a title, like on there, like he's third in points. So
he's still in it.
Yeah, he's still in it. Yep. But you rather almost have those guys taking each other out because they're in it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like they're in the points. Like, oh, I need what Jason went to go do to Eli. That's how you rather those guys fight. And if they're gonna knock each other down, let them knock them down for points. But they both was fighting each other because he got kicked back in 2010, like on there, and the Anaheim back in when Malcolm was on KTM. Him and Jason got into it. Like, or I guess he was on Troy Lee. Jason was on KTM. Like, so there's been a history yet again, like the ultimate goal is just slipping away. And so, yeah, it's, Josh Grant used to do that, but we cool. Like he watches Bubba's World. I see him. I appreciate the lights on there. But yeah, it's no fun. It's no fun. Cause you always, every race, you're going to see the guy, So you gotta squash it. But I do believe, I'll be shocked if they get into it again. I'll be shocked.
It's almost like, okay, you're good. You're good. I'm good. Okay. We're good now. Let's just move on from this. It was a lot like the Vince and Christian thing, which I found to be extremely funny how Vince and Christian get into their big old deal. And it's like, what better way to move on than just go 1-2 the next weekend?
Yeah.
It's like, how does that happen?
Yeah. Well, and I think like hindsight looking at it, Christian obviously got a lot more to lose. So I can see why he'd be like, for whatever, like, let me let it go. I don't think, I think he probably thinks Vince still did it on purpose, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Vince has the, history of, he's got to let it go because I mean, dude, like he's got a, olive branch, by us like breaking that down. Like, I don't think he did it on purpose. So if he goes and does something like that again, like
he's on the hot seat now,
he's like, over for him. So I can see why those guys would just squash it. And then, like you said, they go 1-2, but they both recognize like the situation and hopefully Malcolm and Jason like has too. And that's why I feel like I don't see it happening again.
Yeah. So. I don't either. I mean, unless it was a random first lap mix up, but yeah. I don't see any like,
nothing
I got you.
Yeah.
I think I can only see it if they both are out of the points again now, like, and they just hate each other and they want to do it. But just far as I think they'll just start racing.
I agree.
Speaking on incidents, Daniel, your opinion on the Jet Faulkner thing, what you saw on the floor.
Again, I saw it from the front angle in real time. I didn't catch him hit the tough block. It looked like he just went from left to right and whatever. So at my first initial thought, luckily I wasn't in the booth calling it. I was on the floor. So I didn't have to make a call. My first thought was, ooh, that was just really reckless and dumb on Jet's part. And then you see the replay, you see what happened. And I guess I look at it in two ways and they are a little contradictory. In one sense, Jet was going for it. You saw him in the whoops. I mean, he was committed to going as far to the front as possible. So a lot of people would say, oh, he was riding reckless in general, which I didn't see that. I saw a tough whoop section that got him. But the actual incident itself, he barely clipped the block, but that's enough. Those things, they're weird. They can be spongy. They could be
springy.
You can deflect. So when I saw it all back and knowing the situation and then talking to Jet after, because Jet was...
Yeah, he seemed genuine.
It wasn't fake. I actually was on the cart with him from press conference back up to the top. Dude wouldn't even talk, had his hoodie, head down. And he's pretty much said, if I take someone out in a corner, my bad.
Yeah.
But if I take someone out in the air and they get hurt, like he couldn't take it. He was really messed up.
Well, and his whole story, you know what I mean? Like how many times he's been hurt now?
It was like kicking a dog while he's down. I mean, Faulkner, we're all kind of like pulling for the guy. Like, can we get one going? And he was doing everything right. And then that happened. So,
and I think he could have really killed Jet in that turn. Like he could have done it. He didn't.
And I think
only because he's probably like, let me just get through this race.
100%. His whole attitude this year is to be different. You go back a year or two ago, he's probably drilling him in the berm.
No, for sure.
But now he's like, I'm just going to try to be clean here. And then he gets caught up in something that's not his fault. But I felt bad for him. And I felt bad for Jet too, because I know it was not intentional. And I don't think he was being careless and reckless as much as he was just sending to his ability.
But the
thing with Jet, and this is where it's hard for him too, is there's so much hype around him and most of it's positive. He's that happy kid, whatever. this was like a tough look because he's the kid now who just hurt somebody unintentionally. So I was really curious to how he would bounce back this weekend just with a lot of attention on it. And I, for me personally, I think him with the white flag thing and almost, you know, pulling off in the heat race, that couldn't have been a better thing for him to move on than to have something silly like that happen. Cause now everyone's kind of remembering that now. So it's like, it was his way of moving on. And so for me watching that happen, I was like, this might be his way of moving past that, because now the attention is on how goofy he is and how he like almost pulled off on a white flag.
Yeah.
So, but I feel bad for both, and obviously more Austin, cause he was doing things right.
Yeah.
He got caught.
Yeah. I actually thought, like, I mean, if you watch, again, like watching it from TV, we see a lot. I mean, even Race Day Live, like I watched the whole thing. I just saw it the way the whole corner, how close it was to the finish line, automatically let guys cross jumping each other, you know, and if you cut down inside, it just moved you out. And so when Jet hit the hay bale, like he was already going that way.
I mean, left
to right. So when he just hit it, it just, you know, moved him an inch, whatever. And it really threw him into Austin. And I think luckily for him, nobody looked at it as like a dirty thing, because we all do dirty stuff, take people out in the corner. Like even myself, like only time I ever felt bad for cutting somebody off was when it happened in the air, you know, nobody wants to do that, you know? So
it's so dangerous. Yeah, you would never do that intentional. It's too dangerous.
It's dangerous for yourself too. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't usually end well for both of y'all. So
Jeff got lucky. He didn't get hurt.
He's very lucky.
Yeah. I actually thought he actually hit harder than Austin did, but you know, the Oklahoma's like, I would say he's starting to remind me of Robbie Renard now.
Who's that?
Jet. I mean, not Jet, but Austin.
Yeah.
Guy with a lot of talent, but has shoulder injuries, you know, kind of fragile. Robbie was my guy. So that's why I always say, like, it bummed me out. He's always hurt. But I just think, like, it was tough for him mentally because, you know, again, everybody's pulling for Austin, but at the same time, like, I didn't think it would affect him that much just because it wasn't like a Vince thing where you're trying to convince people that, oh, that's not who I am. I think the hardest part would have been how he felt towards, and obviously he felt bad for it. But yeah, it was a racing incident to me. It was just kind of a way the track was set up a little bit.
Scary. And you're right. When you go from a 180 to a 180 and they go back, the natural thing is to start on the left, get your body and your bike back over to the right. So you're right. I think naturally that's where he wanted to go, but the tough block made it like twice as aggressive to the right. Like it just shot him double what he wanted to do.
And that finish line jump was a lot closer to the corner than most of them. So that it makes that even, you know, harder, like that swing back even more. So yeah, it was, you know, it was unfortunate. I mean, we lost another good guy in the series. And then now with Jeremy going out, it's funny how like every year you come into it and it's
so stacked.
And then like, then everybody's out, but it always seems like it's this year with the 450 class. It hasn't been like that. Knock on wood. Like everybody's still that there now. Your people are, you know, winning, getting lap, whatnot, because of what they're doing. But it hasn't been like because guys are hurt.
Yeah, we didn't just lose half the field this year.
And but it's always one year. It's always somebody, some coast, and usually it's been the 450. I guess because we pay attention to it. But you know, I guess even in 250 class, you always lose it. But everybody's split, so you lose one guy, it's like losing two, you know.
Yeah, and we lost important ones. Losing Nichols at round one, terrible.
Yeah.
Then Hammacher's doing great, lose him. Then we go east, and it's Faulkner right away. Then it's Jamar. The problem is we're not even getting into these championships before we're losing winners, guys that can win races, and now the whole landscape looks different. Last night looked very different than Minneapolis.
Yeah.
The lineup, like, dramatically different.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy how fast that happens too.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick
break.
I do. Like, and Daniel, you doing it to me, man. You doing it to him. I'm just nervous of greatness right here. Stop. Let's take a quick break and let's come back. We'll wrap this thing up. But yeah, let's, I'm going to ask you your thoughts on like, what do you think at the end? Like who you got? So we'll be right back.
Monster Energy AMA Supercross Championship.
Are you ready? Let's do it.
Don't miss Monster Energy Supercross. Tickets on sale now for Monster Energy Supercross action at Ford Field March 12th. Visit supercrosslive.com for more info.
And what Cole is saying is everything when I was racing, I always had to think about it before I said it and then think about it again before I said it because it was, you know, it was a message. It's kind of like what you guys do like on TV. It's a message. And then trying to bring back that message, it's critical. But being in my position or at the sport, I always felt like, you know, fairly, unfairly, a lot of it was what made me as popular as I am. And the sad part, the unfair part was that I could say the same thing you said, but people would take it completely different. Mm-hmm. It was always looked at differently. So yep. I got to a point where it was like, I had to think about, not that I was fake on there and I didn't say what I believed. I just thought about the repercussions of saying what I'm about to say.
Right.
Well, good thing is for guys above his world, like I ain't got those worries anymore. I'll never go back to that. Cause I lose sleep over that. Like I say what I say and I believe in it, but I'm back in the day, I might say something for the fans that would upset Yamaha on there and like, okay, well, if Yamaha's upset at me, then how's that affect the fans? Like, you know, like it was that tug of war. So a lot of things that I said, I wouldn't say anything. And it used to drive the fans like nuts. And looking back on it, like I apologize, but there was always a reason for it because it was like they would hang on to everything. And if I said something that I wasn't sure about it, they would hold it to me. And then like then trying to come bring that back, it's like then I'm fake, you know, I'm lying and all that.
It's probably why you and others in the prime of your career don't want to talk to the media much because you're so worried about what you're going to say, what they're going to do with that, good or bad. So you're like, it's like a little game that you want to avoid because if you want to be fully honest at that time, yeah, you might piss some people off. So it's like, I'd rather not talk to anybody because I'd rather just go do my job where... And that's the hard part for us on our side because we want to hear from you guys so bad. Like we want to hear it. But at the same time, you're wondering what we're going to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, he could explain to it better. How many conversations like you used to have about James and do this or whatnot. And you know, the reason why, or said, or didn't go somewhere or what, but like you get, you know, like you saw how like gnarly it was and people were hanging on it. And like, that was half the battle. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, people don't understand. It's not racing is that's the easy part. Like they really do say Saturday is the easiest part. It's everything else. And you, even from football, we go into that. Like they call it like the Super Bowl hangover.
Yep.
It ain't because like they won the game. They're stoked. They went out at night. It's the media. It's all the things of being a champion. It's how everybody else looks at you that changes. And over time, like that wears you down. And that's why I like to come back the next year and be as hungry and be fired up. You're kind of exhausted. And in 2009, when I won that title, I didn't race outdoors that year. I was supercross only. Dude, for like 3 months, dude, I was exhausted. And it was because I won the title. One, I fought Chad all the way to the end. But then I had new sponsors with Nike, Bell, Answer at that time. Everybody wanted like to be a part of the champion. So I was up there creating like new helmet for Bell. They just won another title. And it was all the media stuff. And
so I'm like, obligations.
Obligation. After. And yeah. Dude, I was exhausted like afterwards. And so it's that. And then living that part for, you know, 10, 15 years, like that's why when I said I was done racing, like I'm done racing, but like, I got to shed everything off. Like everything's got to shut off. And then it took me a while to kind of get to a point to where my own mindset that it's not like that. And then like being able to like be a part of this now and talk, it's like, you guys are going to get me. You're gonna get me, man.
Good. And that's why I watch and listen. Yeah. Is because I can tell you're authentically just saying what you want to say and you're comfortable saying it. And that comes across. You know, sometimes you can tell when someone's pitching you their thought.
Believe in it.
Yeah. And it's like they're saying what they think you want to hear versus what you want to say. And I mean, for me, my immediate respect for you right out of the gate was when you said your thoughts on your brother. And I went, James is going to start telling, if he's going to say that right out of the gate, then he's going to tell the truth. And that's why I've watched everyone because
even though he's a little wrong, but,
Hey, but I will admit this. It wasn't like what you said right there when the authentic about Malcolm, but then we were in the car and I explained to you, like maybe that's some things I a couple weeks ago when I was explaining the why I thought that, like instead of like when I said the show, I'm like, well, I don't think he'll be a third place guy. Like, you know, right off the bat, if I don't explain why I think it's like that, then you don't really, you're like, that's kind of wrong. And so when we were talking in the car, you were like, oh, okay. Now I understand like why you said this, like why you said it about Malcolm. You're like, I thought you were just brotherly loving. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, no, well, I don't think he would be in the third place because all the things we talked about, like right. it's a process. Like, it's more, it would be unfair for me to say that to him on there. And it actually, I feel like it would put more pressure on him to represent what I just said. It's, I think it would hurt him on there. So
you would put too shiny of a light on him, and with some expectations that maybe you didn't even believe because he's your brother. And now all of a sudden he has to meet a standard that you created for him.
Yeah. And I know, like, the process of what it takes to get there. And he just, I didn't feel like he was ready, like, at that point. And it wasn't like a negative. It was the fact that, like, Eli, like, where he's at now, like, I didn't think when I picked him for the title, I picked the guy to win. But there's a process in growing that's happened, like, with him, he's better than I thought. He's gotten better since the first race. And it was the same thing with Malcolm, to say that all of a sudden he's going to be here. And I think what people, if you don't get a lot of insight into sports and you just hear one comment, you'd be like, oh, James picked him for third. Why isn't Malcolm not getting third? Like, he said it. And, like, so I was trying to explain to him a few weeks ago, like, no, this is why I said that. It's actually to help him on there. And if you ask me that today, I'd be like, yeah, he's a third place guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I would pick him to probably finish third in the series. So, but I had to explain it to you. So I guess what he was saying about authentic, like, being authentic, like, that's me. That's what you're going to get. But the reasons why is what we try to do and break down this stuff. So just jumping on to Malcolm, I actually felt like the jump from fifth to third to that belief, if Malcolm got that belief, the jump from third to first wouldn't be big. Like, mm-hmm. It actually, because I don't think it's like, it's not like, even though Eli's winning, it's not like he's dominating. Like,
circumstances.
It's circumstances. But he's the best guy. Like, clear, overall, he's the best guy. But it's not like it's, you know, when I race Ricky outdoors and stuff, like, I'm like, dude, I got to bring it. Like, his level when I'm not on my game, or his level compared to from first to third, it's such a huge difference that, like, it's going to take a lot to get there. Where I just feel like with Malcolm, he's always been fast. Like, he's always been fast. He rides Supercross well. It's there. So once he believes that, like, that's where he belongs, I think, like, just his talent alone would take him to that next step. So it was more like, if he can be third, he can win. Like, so don't be surprised if, like, I go from, like, I don't know if he'll be fifth to, like, next year, I'm like, I think Malcolm's the title favorite. Like, he's my
bigger leap.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to see him get closer to it, become part of that group. Then let's talk about pulling this thing off and winning.
Yeah. I just think his belief, like, of finishing these races off on there, like he did last night in the heat race, how he rode that heat race compared to a couple weeks ago, that growth is what I'm seeing. And it only bodes well from him. His talent wise allows him to be in the heat. Like, it allows him to win a heat race. It allows him to be the fastest. I never doubted that. Like, it's just being able to, like, him believe that is a process that, like, I guess if you've never been there, like, it's hard to understand. And people, if you really start looking into it, just look at what's happening this year. Yeah. Like, it's everybody's still healthy on there. Like, it's not like a big change, but it's all mentality of where people believe they should be at and where they're at. Like, Ken Roczen, like, his bike was the same as it was when he beat you guys by 10 seconds at Anaheim 1. Yeah. It's the same as it was last night. Look at it on there. And it's a mentality. Cooper Webb, like, 2 weeks ago, we were like, huh, whatever. He got on the podium. Look at him. He almost won last night. So the sport is mentally on there. And that's where people were kind of underestimating that. And I think I don't think he can get third or whatnot, so you're not going to be a third place guy. I think people look at it as, like, I'm saying he's not talented or he's not good enough. That ain't the case. Like, it's less surprising to me that he's fast or winning the heat race. Him getting it done isn't surprising because I know he can. That's why I feel like once he believes he can, he can wax y'all ass on there. Like, it's always been there. It's just, you know, it's getting him to do it and believe that he can. And I think it's starting to happen now. So
it's going from I think I could be a guy to I think I should be a guy. From could to should is like a light switch, I think. And you see it because all of a sudden the riders talk different. Like you said, you could tell in their mood. Even for me being at the track, when I talk to the riders, their mood tells a story.
Yeah.
Like, I could tell if they believe or not just by a little conversation.
I used to say that to him all the time. Like, Chad Reed, like, he's like, I love the guy now. We're friends. But I used to watch him. Like, I could tell how the night was going to go when he walked track.
That's crazy.
Dude, I would look at him and be like, he had his head down.
It's going to be a good night.
It's going to be a good night. Yeah. And then
but if his chest perking, is out, like, he had out his, you're like, huh.
He had his glasses on. Like, what up? What? I'm like, oh, no.
He feels good. Out
tonight. Like, it's going to be. But Ricky was Ricky was always Ricky. Like, I knew he was going to bring it. Like, so he was easier to race than Chad, even though, like, outdoors, like, he was harder to race. But I think me and Ricky, we always talk about, he would say James was hard to race because James would do something that, like, we couldn't. Chad was hard to race because of Chad's mentality.
Couldn't, like, read him. It's what, like, were you getting that night?
What were you getting? And, dude, that was the hardest part. So, you know, me and Ricky knew what I was going to bring. I knew what he was going to bring. But God damn it, Chad, like, it's, yeah, we didn't know what box of chocolates you were bringing. So
that's funny too, because I've talked to Ricky about you and about Chad too, and it's funny to hear you guys talk about how you approached each other. It was, I mean, it just brings that whole generation, it makes it understandable at a different level, you know what I mean? Like, I watched it all and was amazed by it all, but hearing Chad talk about, yeah, Ricky, he was like this and James was like this, and now hearing you say the same things, man, that was a cool era to watch. For the fans, I don't know how it could be any better, because you guys all did. Yeah, all hated each other, and you all wanted to win so bad, and you all understood each other.
Yeah.
Really understood the guy next to you, where I still think in this sport now, maybe because there's so many guys that are good, they don't all understand each other all the way. They know a little bit about each other, where you knew every, like you said, you could watch Chad on track walk, you could tell what you were getting yourself into. That's,
yeah.
Talk about being ready.
Yeah, I mean, me and Ricky would joke around, even Chad, when I spent some time with him. It's like, dude, all the little things that are happening now, I would use that against these guys. Like, if you were on my plane, it was only because I knew it would benefit me to win. Like, that, it's just reality. And again, it's not a knock to this era. It's just, I think
I couldn't imagine flying with Chad or Ricky. No way.
No, I could you imagine me riding with Chad or Ricky like on there? And that's what I said. Like, even with Jace, like, Roxanne was winning the title, like, on there. Like, him and Eli, like, they're on the plane. It's just a different mentality, like, on there. And that's fine if everybody else is like that.
Yeah.
But if you come across a guy that ain't like that, then you guys are going to be in a world of hurt, because, like, he's going to use things that you guys just see as normal and you just do. He's going to use that against you. And that's why I feel like, why they hate racing Cooper Webb. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Cooper's the guy that is, he ain't faster than y'all. Like, he's never been, but he outraces you and he uses your weaknesses against you, and you know it. And
he seem the most old school to you? Like, he would have fit in.
Yeah, that's probably good.
I think he would have fit in your guys' era. He would have fit in the Ryan era. He kind of feels like a throwback to that mentality, where the rest of it, like, I don't see Cooper on a flight with nobody. Like, he just doesn't seem like he would like to even be around anybody.
Dude, I think there was more flights just you, me, and the dog.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean,
for real.
It wouldn't even have thought.
There was plenty of room. But
like, to be honest with you, and Rick, you probably said it, like, we used to fly private, and, like, Chad's jet would be there. I would make sure I get to the thing. I want to leave before he did. Like, I want to leave before he did. Awesome. Like, it's, I'm telling you, it's always like a battle with them. And Cooper, like, he is old school. Second guy would be Jason Anderson. Like, he's like a mix between, like, the both. That's why, you know, sometimes the old school is coming out and, you know, like, not backing down, like, it works against you in a sense. Right. But yeah, 100%. It was always to benefit, to beat the guy. And
you know, when I hear you talking this way too, I, again, my brain is always in broadcaster brain mode. Like, I just think that way because it's my job. But your guys' era, you were the hero and a villain for the Carmichael fans and the Reed fans. They hated you too.
Yeah.
For television, you got to have heroes and villains. I mean, I think that's better than anything. And again, this is no shot at the Ryans, but their era was almost too clean. There was, they didn't hate each other enough. They didn't, they battled. They had some good on-track battles, but you could tell, like, there was too much respect, where you guys didn't. So it's like, your fans hated Ricky and Chad. Chad's fans, and that makes good TV, because now you not only want your guy to do good, but you want that other guy to not do good. And I truly think that that brings out the best in television is when you have a villain. If there is no villain, it's not that good. And of course, you don't have to be the villain, but you were to some of the fans. It's a different way of watching because now you have more at play than just wanting your guy to do okay that night. And if he doesn't, okay. It's like, no, you're invested because you're truly on a side. And I think for television, I wish we had more. I mean, if Malcolm and Jason right now were 1 and 2 in the points, oh, next week is just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
We're talking about how they're going to clean it up, but for the fans, they wish they didn't.
Yeah.
They wish they didn't. Yep. But
no, and I think it's a part of like the era too, because the fact is it's unnormal to see that. Like it's kind of, all right, this is happening. People getting fined, points taken away. Like I didn't see no like fine when Atlanta, you know, like, and then I guess, I don't know, a few times, whatnot. It's like there was no fines going on, but
you
I think
fined a couple times.
No, I did, but I think
kicking someone's bike.
Yeah, I mean, get fined for that too. Yeah, but like I guess the point is, like I would have never thought about making it up, like to chat, like it'd never end till we went golfing like last year. It's like, all right, we cool. Like we still had beef from back in Unadilla on there, and I didn't like him because of something I heard before Unadilla. So it's led in since back 2002. But the fact is like it's just wild to like see like some of the things that like I'm like it's almost like a plate of food and everybody it's on the table, but nobody picks at it. Like it's like you all these guys, there's an opportunity to learn and use things against the guys that will help you win. Like and it's simple. And they're like it's their menu, their recipe is sitting out, they're holding it up, but nobody's like, I wonder what the recipe is. Like I wonder what it is. And yeah, I just think that's why again that they don't like racing Cooper, because Cooper looks at them like he'll look it over, you're using against him, and you know, like I said, case in point, like when has he ever been like just clearly better than everybody else?
It's not how he does it.
But then like the guy who wins races, he's the worst person to race against. I think, again, what I said earlier, Cooper was the only guy. Cooper and Jason was my pick. Beat Eli at Daytona because of just how they race and
the mentality.
And the fact that Eli wouldn't want to race them at the end, and gets one. He was 2 minutes from doing it. Like Malcolm, if he was on it, like which he was, he can outrun Eli talented wise. Mm-hmm. Like he could. But I don't think Eli looks at him yet as he looks at those two guys. But in a couple of weeks, he might.
That goes back to the hope, because things change quick. So you want that injected in there. But you're right. If you're Eli, you're looking at Cooper late in a race and you're going, oh, yeah. You're looking at Jason. You're going, oh, I don't know what I'm going to get. Where the other guys, he has a belief that I can figure these guys out late in a race. Where the other two, like, what am I going to do here?
Yeah. No, 100%. Like it. And that villain thing you talked about on TV, I felt it. Like the year Ricky went from Honda 2004 to boo, boo, until 2005, showing up at Anaheim 1, and there goes my hero. They loved him. They booed me. And I was like what? And I actually think like a part of that is what made Ricky somewhat the GOAT, like what people like that whole villain thing, like he was the guy, like kind of like what McGrath did when Ricky was coming up. They didn't want him like the new guy coming in because they knew the new guy would have his time. They didn't want him right then. And I think like people really start embracing and looking at Ricky's, you know, past history, like look how many times he's won his championships, and it put him on a platform, which he deserved. A lot more just because of the fans and the TV and stuff, because of that villain role. But yeah, I was like, yeah, I didn't do nothing to y'all here. They're booing him like, Ricky, like, dude. And the funny thing is we come down and we're sitting in that little deal and be like, I'm sorry, guys, I'm sorry. And I was like, dude, you're only saying that because like you freaking are trying to beat me. Ricky used to come out at the gate. No lie. He used to come up to the gate and be like, like talking to the mechanic, but when I was lined up next to him,
he could hear it.
Yeah, so I can be like, oh, that track's so rough, man. Oh, I'm so tired. And I'm like, in my head, like, oh, damn, Ricky, he said that track is rough. It must be rough, Jane. Don't believe in it. Don't believe in it.
What's he doing here? What's he saying here?
And Ricky, that's how he was. It would use it against me, but it's It was cool.
It's different. That era, yeah. I mean, it was just the coolest era. Yeah. I mean, one-on-ones are cool, but one-on-one-on-one, when there's three and it's it, because you really have your own fan base. I bet there wasn't many out there that liked two of you.
Yeah.
No.
I bet it was like you pick the one you like and that's your one. And that's...
Yeah, I mean, even cool. Chase, though, he's like, I was a Reed fan.
Yeah.
Like, well, good for you. Like, yeah, good.
But get out of here.
Yeah. And he's like, but again, it was like, you didn't even give a chance to know the other side. Cause it's like, well,
you weren't allowed to.
No. Yeah. So
it's crazy. I think back to Daytona last year. Remember, Cooper got into Kenny and then Kenny on the podium. Oh, he likes to play those games. Well, if he doesn't know is I like to play those too. And I will be honest. This might come across harsh to the Roczen fans, but when I heard that, I said, oh, he's done. Because that is not true.
Oh, man.
To me, it did not come across authentic. I went, that was words. And if anything, you just made Cooper that much stronger because I didn't believe it.
I actually think I said that on the recap or something. I said that somewhere. Same thing.
Like I was shocked because I interviewed him. And I was like, yeah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there listening to him. And I'm like, ooh, well, this is going to be great for the broadcast. Yep. But, dude, I think you may have just stepped into something you didn't mean to. Because I don't think you believe that all the way.
No, and he didn't. And I don't think he won another race that year. Like it was
all changed from there.
It all changed. And then Cooper was like, oh yeah. Yeah. You, like you that's what he do. Wanted. Yeah. Sometimes like you pick on a guy like, and you feel bad, but you're going to keep doing it until they snap back. And then you feel like, oh, I really got a reason to get in. And I just felt like, yeah, when Roczen said that at Daytona, I was like,
he would have been better off saying, man, he's just lucky he got into me there. Cause if he didn't, I would have checked out on him 20 seconds. That might've stung him. Yeah, mentally more, but you want to talk about playing his game? You want to play his game? Like,
yeah. Or keep, like you are, keep the fans on it. Like, keep Cooper is going to be himself or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you keep pressure on, like, again, we talked about it, of what everybody else thinks, like, Kenny had everybody on his, you know, his side, his mm-hmm. injury, like, the fans like him. So when you start, like, you know, crap talk and whatnot, I'm going to do this, become something you're not. It was better off just to say like, you know, yeah, it's just aggressive, whatever, dirty. Keep the fans like keeping Cooper in check, you know, keep the industry. But when you like open the door,
he took
like,
the heat off Cooper, he put it on himself.
Okay. Like, what do you expect? He said he was going to do it. Like, you know, so yeah. Daniel, it was awesome having you on, man.
Yeah, man, this was awesome.
Dude, it was awesome. Yeah.
I'm stoked to be here too. And again, seeing the property was cool and hanging out. And the only problem is now I'm on this one. I don't want to watch it back because I like these things. And I hate when I come on shows that I like because then I can't watch it back because I was already here.
Are you that type? Like, can you watch yourself on the show? Like,
I can now. Yeah. In the beginning, I couldn't. I was so judgmental. I would pick apart any little word or any little thing. I mean, I don't even know if you know this, if you caught it, but I called Malcolm Smith last week on the broadcast.
Did you really?
And I corrected myself right in the moment. It was like a quick thing. And I was trying to get back to the booth and year one, I probably wouldn't be able to sleep. But now I'm like, it's just words. I screwed up. I corrected.
There you is didn't even catch it. Yeah, I didn't catch it. So yeah, it's better than what Ralph used to call me, James Reed, like every weekend, at least once or twice. So like, at least you caught it. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I can watch back now because I've found it to be useful.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, I hated my voice, my face, my words were terrible. I hated everything. I was like, you are terrible.
Yeah.
And then once you work for a couple of years, you're like, okay, I'm okay now. And so now I actually watch it
to learn
for progress.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, and it's not so much of a don't do that. It's more of a, oh, you did it that way. Maybe try doing it this way instead. So it's more for carving out the path than like fixing a problem. Because in the beginning, dude, everything was terrible.
You just helped me so much because like everything you're saying, like I'm literally kind of going through that on there. Like I never even watched the recaps like of when we did it with DeFell. I couldn't stand it. Like I'm like, fat little fat man, like whatever. Cause I was pretty bad like on there. But then like we started doing this. I'm like, I can't watch it. But now I watch it to like learn, like, and I'm like, oh, I can do this and get better. So,
I mean, you have a choice, half glass, half empty, half full. Like you could choose, right? If you're going to watch back and critique yourself, always watch with the half glass full.
Yeah.
Watch it from a positive with the intent of being better. If you watch it with the intent of it being negative, you're going to find so many things you don't like. And eventually you're just going to hate speaking because you're going to be like, oh, I'm terrible. When you're not, that's just you're natural your whole life. You've always been trying to get better at everything. That's what you've done. So it's all perspective on how you look at it. And like I was just saying, dude, just blitz the whoops. Don't think about each whoop. Just shift a gear. I watched you up shifting whoops before. Just shift up and go. Yeah,
that's another conversation that we'll have to get into. Just always be better than yesterday and make sure tomorrow's better than today. So that's how we get it. So it was great, man. Great to have you on. I appreciate it. First host, first guest in the show. I feel like I got like eighth tonight. But it was good, though. Like, it was cool. It was great to have you on. Raj, I probably won't see you for another month or two.
Another month.
Fans, click like, subscribe. Let's get Roger back on here. But that was it. Daniel Blair, again, thank you for coming back on. Raj, thanks, Cole, I know you last, but just say it again.
Beach.
Go Beach. All right, Bubble World fan, that was episode number 4. And I'll see you guys here next week on The Rewind.
See you next.
Long. Yeah, I never felt so strong.